Welcome to The Creative Shift. My name is Dan Blank, author of the book Be the Gateway and founder of WeGrowMedia.com. Today, as the first episode of the new year, I wanted to sort of really set the stage for the podcast for this year. And in doing so, I was really giving this a lot of thought in the last month. And in that process, I was thinking back on my history with interviewing. This podcast has primarily been an interview-based podcast where I find people who inspire me, who are writers and illustrators and artists and creators of all sorts, and I have a long conversation with them. And the more I thought about it, the more I realized how long I'd been doing this. And it was more than 25 years ago, I was on the phone with a publicist at a record label. And they said the following words that, in a way, changed my life. They said, "Would you like to interview the band?" Now, at the time, I was in college. And on the side, in my spare time, I was creating a zine. And a zine back in the 80s and 90s was, you know, Z-I-N-E. It was short for magazine. And it was basically a photocop, my own version of a photocopied magazine. So I would create this on my computer. I would print it out. I would go over to Kinko's or a photocopy shop, which were really prevalent at the time. I would print it out. Staple it together or bind it in some way, and then I would distribute it to record stores. And this was a zine focused on the music that I loved. And in that one phone call, it was like a whole world opened up to me. So at the time, I was in college. It was then called at Rutgers the School of Information and Library Science. And most of my education time was spent in classes about mass media, interpersonal communication, public speaking, that sort of thing for my major. And then for my English minor, it was all classes on Chaucer and poetry and stuff like that. But really, the last couple years of college, my big focus was this zine. I was so excited about this because at the time, in the early 90s, this phrase desktop publishing is honestly like a revolutionary idea. Not just that you could type on a computer. As anyone who follows me on Instagram knows, I collect typewriters, and I think they're beautiful and amazing and gorgeous. And typewriters were a revolution. But desktop publishing wasn't just a way to get it onto a screen and maybe save it more easily and replicate it and edit it. Desktop publishing was this idea that you could actually lay it out like a newsletter, like a magazine, like a newspaper. You could bring in images and learn how to really create a publication. So I had at the time this ridiculously cumbersome laptop computer that was a hand-me-down from my dad. But this was like a gateway for me. It was a way for me to have an interest, which was music, and a certain kind of music, and I'll talk about that, and to start writing about it, and to put it into a publication I could put out there. So at the time, I was really into, I guess, what they called Britpop. So all the new music coming out of England, and really the indie scene as well, all the amazing stuff coming out of Seattle, Sub Pop Records. I mean, so much music at that time, which was just brand new. And in a really wide range of different genres, too. The electronic music at the time was breaking its own barriers. So you have all these different musical forms that were really taking hold of the culture, the transition from the 80s to the 90s. I worked at the college radio station, and this was right as grunge was about to hit and hitting. So that was a pretty exciting time to kind of feel like you're, in a way, like front row to that. And I got the idea to do the zine from a friend of mine at the time who had had one for a while, and I was like, whoa, look at that. And his focus of music was totally different than my own. And I started this with a friend of mine. And what I did was, you know, I'd buy records, or I had records I loved, and I would, you know, review them and, you know, have some other friends review them. And then we'd lay them out and we put a headline, and you start realizing this is how I'm going to write an article. And then, because I'd seen my other friend do this, I got brave enough to start calling the publicity departments at all of the major record labels. And this is like a terrifying thing to do, to figure out, I'm going to call Elektra Records, I'm going to call Sire Records, I'm going to call Sub Pop, I'm going to call whatever the major labels were at the time, figure out how to get through to publicity. And even that was a big unlock, that idea of like, there's a department called publicity and their whole job is to get the word out. And normally what I thought at the time, or what I would think as a rational human being, is, hey, they want to talk to Rolling Stone magazine, to Spin magazine, to Alternative Press magazine. Why would they talk to this kid, this college kid in his bedroom? But what you realize is that these people in publicity, they just want to get the word out. So if you're in college and you love music so much, you're creating a zine, and you want to write about some of these bands, not just big bands, we love these little bands or these bands that were trying to get more attention, they were happy to talk to you. So I started getting through to these publicists. And at first, I was asking for review copies of albums. And, you know, the real thing I focused on was albums that were coming out soon. So if there was an album from a band you really liked and it was coming out, you know, in 2 months, they would very likely have early copies they could send to you on vinyl, CD, or tape. Primarily at the time, we got CDs and tapes. I think because shipping vinyl was just such a bigger thing, and I think a lot of the early stuff I got, it was pre-release. It was a white label CD. It was a white label cassette tape. So they start saying yes, and they would send us what we asked for oftentimes, and then would send me other stuff that they were hoping to get press for. And this is a part of that deal. So I got a P.O. box, and it was really insane. The P.O. box started filling with free CDs and tapes. So if you're like a kid who loves music and is like no money, this is like, it's bonkers. It just blows your mind. And of course, then we started being able to kind of write about this. Then there was the idea of saying, oh, this band that we're covering, this band that we love, they're going on tour. Can we get free tickets to a local show so I could review the show? And again, they said yes to that too. And that was another mind-blowing moment, because I would go up to a venue to see one of my favorite bands, like Blur at the time. Huge Blur fan. And to walk up to the door and say, I'm on the list, and have the person at the door go through the list, see that your name was there, give you the like wristband or stamp or whatever it was, and you get into the show for free. Again, it was just insane to realize that this was even possible. And I took the zine just so seriously. It felt like a job at the time, where when I say I focus more on the zine than I did schoolwork, it wasn't as an escape from responsibility. It felt kind of like the opposite. Here I was like running a magazine. And I love that whole idea of picking what would be covered and writing it and coming up with headlines and doing the layout and thinking about distribution and interfacing with the publicists and realizing that balance between what I wanted to cover and being open to other things that they were pitching. And then one day there was the call that I mentioned earlier, which is I called up the publicist about a group called Chapter House, a British group just loved at the time. they had a new album coming out, so I was trying to get, you know, kind of get a copy of that. And then out of nowhere, they just said, yeah, do you want to interview the band? And I'd never thought of this. I never thought this was ever an option. It never occurred to me to talk to these people who were, I was just a big fan of. So, you know, I sort of stumbled through, oh, yeah, sure. And then once you realized it was an option, I felt emboldened. I started calling around to all the other record labels, seeking interviews with bands who had new albums coming out. And over a pretty short period of time, I had secured interviews with Oasis, Just As They're Breaking, with Weezer, with Blur, They Might Be Giants, Cowboy Junkies, and so many other bands that I was really a fan of. So it's just amazing to kind of almost think back on that, where I was able to chat with Noel Gallagher. I interviewed Weezer in person, and it was, I think, in their first big tour, and it was, I was backstage, and, you know, Rivers Cuomo walks in, and it was a weird situation because I'm talking to the drummer and Rivers comes in and I'm introduced, and he had just disappeared for a couple hours. He went for a jog, and he hadn't gone for a jog since he was 11 years old. And I think this was also written up in Rolling Stone at the time. This is weird little moments. And thinking back on it, what I think about is, like, I'm almost embarrassed at how basic my questions must have been, how inexperienced I was at the time, certainly in this type of a role. But I also think, and this goes, you know, relates to a lot of the work that I do now with writers and creators, is that there's always, in some way, this is how you learn. You develop a literacy of a field. So I talk to so many people about podcasts and about social media and about platform and launches. And there's obviously loads and loads and loads that I teach and guide and create with people. But there's also that aspect of learning by doing. And even though part of me is, you know, so nervous about, my gosh, like, how naive must have I sounded with some of these interviews? I'm also like, well, this is how you learn. I put myself in that situation where I was a little bit over my head, but I took it really seriously. I had the best of intentions for everyone I talked with. I put in hours and hours of work, and that's how I learned. I actually dug through and found all of the old tapes for the interview. So I found the little handheld cassette recorder I would carry with me. I had like a couple mini cassette ones and then a regular size. And the cassette tapes where I'm interviewing They Might Be Giants and all these different bands. And it was, you know, hilarious to kind of just start playing a couple of them back. And, you know, I'm realizing how basic the technology was back then compared to what we have now. Now I have this high quality microphone. It's not just because I had a bigger budget. There are so many articles out there about how to start a podcast on a budget. And because of the changes in social media and digital media, we have all of these ways of not just creating high quality stuff, but interviewing people across the world and of publishing it. I mean, at the time I was printing this out, getting on my bicycle, cycling over to all these record stores, asking the kid behind the counter if I could put a stack of them by the door, and thrilled if they said yes. And it's funny how pathetic that is, because I knew it at the time and I know it now. You know, it's like people might pick it up, but they don't know what it is. You're not, you know, you don't know who they are. They might look at it for 10 feet, then throw it on the ground and keep walking. And why I do the work that I do, and why I love this so much, even though it's a complex field that we all work in as writers and with publishing and with sharing, is that I know that feeling of all of that work to get that zine to that door, and then not knowing who the people were, and not know if it's going to engage them, and having no way to stay connected with them. And this is something I went into a large amount of debt for. At the time, I was earning $4.25 an hour, obviously part-time because I'm in college. And when you were photocopying these things, I was printing out 100, 200, 300, 500 copies. For every issue that was printed, I was getting hundreds of dollars into debt. And on some issues, I think I got into thousands of dollars of debt. All told, I walked away from this thing with thousands and thousands of dollars on credit card. And I dutifully paid that off over a series of years. And that also very served me really well, because it really got me in that, having that early experience of credit card debt. It meant I did not ever want to have credit card debt ever again. So it was a very formative experience for me and a very positive one. And it's where so many things started. It's where this whole idea of interviewing people started. It's where writing to a deadline started for me in a serious way. I know in grade school, I had to write to a deadline, but it's a different thing when it's something that you're doing because you want to, because you're doing it a passion, and because there is a bit of pride in there. You are trying to create something that you are proud of, something that helps the band and helps the label, something that you genuinely hope connects with the reader in a personal way. And I've sent out my email newsletter every single week for about 15 years. And again, it started in a way with that zine. And the interviews I did then extend to what you're listening to right now. When I first launched what I do now, a little company called We Grow Media, where I work with writers, that started in 2010. And the month that I started it, I also started doing these interviews. And at the time, they were video interviews via Skype, and I published them to my blog and my newsletter. And I was interviewing writers and all of the people I was meeting in the publishing industry. And I was publishing them on my site. And it was very similar to what I was doing with the zine. And it's very similar to what I do today in this podcast. And it was interesting. So I looked back on those, which again was funny in a different way, because even that, you know, it was 10 years ago. And it's just funny because I look so different. It's really funny looking back at them. But you really get a sense of the same tone and the similar kinds of questions. And some of these people I talked to, you know, in those early interviews are people I'm still stay in touch with. Jane Friedman and Betsy Bird and Kevin Smokler and Joanna Penn and Nathan Bransford and Joel Friedlander and Beth Ann Patrick and so many others. People who are creators and who are supporting other people writing and sharing their work. And it was so, you know, it sort of filled my heart a bit to look back on these interviews and know that I'm still connected with these people and really just have such a respect for the work that they do. It's just really wonderful to see that. And with all of this, at the time I was doing these, and they were working. The interviews in 2010, 2011, they got a fair amount of attention. And then I stopped doing them. And it was interesting because I stopped doing them because they were working. At the time, I was trying to start this business. I was trying to become known for someone who would work with writers, who would help with marketing and platform and messaging and content strategy and book launches. And the quote-unquote problem I had is that I wouldn't get introduced as, this is Dan Blank, he does this amazing work with writers. I got introduced as, this is Dan Blank, who does these amazing interviews. And I did not want to be known as an interviewer. I want to be known as someone who helps. So I said, I've got to stop this because I'm building the wrong kind of platform for myself. And, you know, I definitely think, huh, it probably would have been much, much better if I kept doing the interviews. But decision I made at the time, things have worked out well regardless. But that's the decision I made. And then it was a couple years later, I started working on a book and I was doing some primary research, doing more interviews with people. It was a book about creative risk. And I said, well, you know what? I'm doing these interviews and the book's not going to be done for a while. Why don't I just share the interviews on a podcast? That way I have new content. I'm so excited about these people and I can share that primary research. So it was only a couple years later, I started what is essentially this podcast. I think it had a different name at the time. And I started doing this. And it's been all over the place in that time in terms of scheduling. At first, it was 10 episodes. Then it was whenever I felt like it. Then I started monthly. And then I started weekly. And a couple months ago in my blog, I wrote about how I was going through a creative reset. And this is something I do every year. It's not a big creative reset. It's a little creative reset. It's where I get to analyze. Let me look at everything I'm doing. Let me look at all the ideas of things I want to be doing. Let me think about my goals. Let me think about my day-to-day experience and just make sure that I'm in alignment. Let me not get so focused on habits that I miss doing a little bit of a course correction to think about what are my values and what are the things I want to be creating. So in that creative reset, I get to challenge everything. And I ask myself, should I bother with this podcast anymore? Should I just stop? And it's nice when you can give yourself that question with total permission to answer it any way you like, to think, well, yeah, let's say I stop it. So what do I gain? You gain, obviously, a lot of free time. You gain a lot of creative energy you can put to other things. And I asked myself that question, you know, why do I keep doing it? And it was a very quick answer that I wanted to keep doing it. Not because it earns me any money, not because it's core to my business, not because the podcast has a huge audience, and not because I ever expect any of those things to come from the podcast. I really wanted to keep doing this podcast because it is a wonderful way for me to meet new people who absolutely inspire me. Everyone I interview is someone who I came across online in some way and was like, wow, look at this thing they're doing. Or wow, look at that thing they said. This person is so interesting. It would be so cool to be able to meet them. Then the second thing is this idea that I get to have these deep one-on-one conversations, which is something I love doing. It's not just I get to follow, not just I get a moment. For the most part, we get to have these long, hour-long conversations where I get to ask them everything I want about creativity and their process and their career and risks they take and the experiences they have. And that to me is like, that's just total joy. Then I get to take that and showcase it with the audience I do have. I get to not just share it on the podcast, but often I'll put it in my newsletter. I'll share it in social media, not just at the time, but I'll be sharing these months and years later because I will have framed it into something that is helpful in addition to being a wonderful story. And then the last reason is that it allows me to dig deep into the reality of doing this creative work. My whole life is really about being in the trenches with writers and creators. And that's my ideal life, is being able to not just look at this work in a distance, but really, you know, doing that, really having that idea of doing this work myself and then talking to people who are doing this. And in many ways, this podcast, I view it as a hobby. This is something I do for pure joy. And I grew up, I was the art kid. I was the kid who was doing all kinds of arts from, I think I was 5 years old. I started going to art school. I was the art kid in grade school. I was this weird art kid in high school. I was doing all kinds of projects after high school and college and all of that. My wife is an amazing artist. Throughout my whole life, my friends have been the artistic types, whether they were the photographer, the dancer, the actor, the writer, the illustrator, the set designer. And for me to be able to, through this podcast, spend more time meeting creative people and digging deep into what it means for them to create and share, I mean, that's just it for me. That's my dream. And that's why I do this, and it's why I'm continuing to do this. And as I think about what I want to share in the podcast moving forward, it really is about that, about meeting new people who inspire me, of having deep conversations, and of sharing their voices with all of you. And I do think that there's stuff that I'm always learning from, even as I reflect on this, which is all of you in one way, shape, or form probably have a platform as a creator. And maybe you call it that, maybe you don't. Maybe you're a writer, maybe you're an illustrator, maybe you're in a book launch, maybe you're years away from that. And as you think about what you do with that platform, a lot of people have apprehension around social media for a wide range of reasons. Oh, it's too short, it's too flippant, I don't know who these people are. Those are all things I hear from people often. One thing I like about this story of the podcast is that this is my way of not doing that. This is my way of reaching out and meeting people and having a meaningful conversation, of having it focused on generosity. I very, very, very much try to focus the interviews on that person. I try to talk as little as possible in the interviews because I don't want it to be about me. I want to showcase them. I am always trying to do better at figuring out how can I better share these stories of the people I'm interviewing, and I can always improve at that. And this is something that I think each of us have an opportunity to do, whether it's through interviewing or publishing or what have you. So I have an amazing range of upcoming episodes, interviews I'm so excited to share with you. And I'm excited for this year in the podcast. If you're listening to this, if you've listened to anything else I've done in the past, thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for just supporting the work I do in any way that you have. It was interesting for me to look back, not just on the years of doing the podcast, or the decade of doing We Grow Media, or the 15 years of doing the newsletter, but the 25 years of where it started with the zine, and even connecting that back to all the weird, silly, ill-fated art projects that started when I was 5. So you being anywhere on this journey with me just means the world to me. All right, I have a lot to share on the podcast this season, and I will remind you, if you haven't yet, please consider reviewing and rating this podcast over on Apple Podcasts. You can reach out to me on social media. I'm at Dan Blank over on Instagram and Twitter. You can sign up for my newsletter over on wegrowmedia.com. And of course, subscribe to this podcast if you aren't already. Thank you so much for listening until the end.